begin with an uplifting note. And of Zion on the days and Tainus, Rashi writes that a day of rain is a day of Esros. So Baruch Hashem, rather unusually, I don't recall too often that it's happened, we had a huge downpour today. Rashi in Tainus tells us that that means it's an Eitzrotzen, it's a sign of Bechilas Avoinus. So we have a very positive. We've had in the last while disturbing incidents, very disturbing incidents. And why things happen, why the Rabbeinu Shlom wants them to happen, that's not in the absence of Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh. We have no means of knowing what the Rabbeinu Shalom actually wants. But nevertheless, we have to observe the things that take place and at least see in what direction they point us. Why they took place, that's not an oscope. And that the Novi already said, there are many things in this morning's Aftera which the Rabbeinu Shalom does which are inscrutable. Which even the Vim, unless they have a special grant from the Rabbeinu Shalom, cannot understand. But a direction in which things point, and perhaps steps that we should take, that perhaps we can learn. And the disturbing events, Lo Aleinu, this young Chassidus boy in Borough Park, snatched away. Hardened policemen of the city of New York, the city of 7-8 million people. There's little that they haven't seen in their career in the police work. And hardened policemen were shattered by what took place. Totally inexplicable. In the whole, their realm of experience, they couldn't place it off the charts. Sat with an Adam Dodel right after it took place. And he said he once heard from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that in Litton, Lithuania, they arrested a Jewish butcher and they wrote him up in charges of a blood libel, the classical blood libels. Apparently early in the 20th century this took place. This lawyer later came to the United States. He was a firm lawyer. So he undertook successfully his defense. One of the arguments that he made before Lithuanian jurisprudence was that let us research the entire judicial history of Lithuania. Has there ever been one Jew found guilty of murder in Lithuania? And the answer was no. There had never been a Jew found guilty of murder in Lithuania. Never happened. And then he had an incident just right before Pesach. From a well known by people in my family, by members of his Beis HaKnesses, is a fine and upstanding individual. Comes home and murders his wife one day. Her brother is a childhood friend of mine. About a month before it took place, I met him for the first time in a very long time. We spent a long time together with a chassan or reminiscing. I haven't been able to pick up the phone yet to call him. Since the Shiva, I was aware of it. And I had his number. I can't pick up the phone to call him. An only sister, has no brothers. What took place in Eretz Yisrael? In Walozer Abu Chatzera. Allah Mashallah. Strange events. If we think back over all the years, it's been very, very rare in our community that one Jew was murdered another Jew. Extremely rare. It has happened. There was a case about 25, 30 years back in East Flatbush. I murdered his wife. Moshe Tendler testified in court against him and put him away. Rare. They're rare incidents in such a short period of time. Shocking incidents. One more shocking than the next. As I say, what the Rabbeinu Shalom's message is, why the Rabbeinu Shalom bring these things about, that's beyond us. I would not even begin to speculate why. But one thing that perhaps can focus on. All of these things brought forth a tremendous regish of Avos Yisrael. Tremendous regish of Avos Yisrael. Sense of loss, whether those that were associated with the person, those that weren't associated with the person, the loss of Jewish life brought forth tremendous regish, tremendous concern, an outpouring of emotion. Avos Yisrael. Avos Yisrael not only for those that are near and dear to us, but for those that we don't even know at all. Where our lives have never crossed paths with their lives at all. But nevertheless, a very deep feeling of Avos Yisrael, an extreme sadness. Taking perspective on these events. If these events have brought forth the measure of Avos Yisrael, then perhaps what we need to learn, at least what we can do, is they should point us in the direction of strengthening Avos Yisrael. Gemara Numa says something very, very amazing. Gemara says, Mikdash Rishayin was destroyed because they were not Isaac, they were not involved, because they were involved, rather. And Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayas, and Shpichas Dom. Some of it we read this morning in Haftarah, in Yirmiyah, in Asif Asifa. A heavy list. And the Rabbeinu Shalom, as it were, says, is it conceivable that I can let such things go by without a heavenly response, without judgment, without mishpat? But the Gemara Numa, Naftesim and Breiz, raises the issue, but by a shame, that there were Isaac and Torah and Gemilas Chasodim. There was Torah and there was Gemilas Chasodim. In an enormous fashion. Why was it destroyed? And the Gemara Numa tells us, because there was Sinas Chinam. What exactly was that Sinas Chinam? And the question also is, Was it that there were some that were involved in Gemilas Chesed, many, and others that were involved in Sinas Chinam? So in the Gemara it would seem a little bit more than that. As Chavar of mine pointed out recently. It would seem that those that had the Gemilas Chesed, they also had the Sinas Chinam. A strange mix. We read traditionally Parshas Dvorim on the Shabbos before Tisha B'av. And we have one pasuk that we recite. In a broad sense, we read it because it's Teichocha, it's the Musar of Moshe Rabbeinu. It begins Parshas Dvorim. And as Rashi tells us, he waited his entire lifetime. He did not let loose. He saved it up, that one final testament to say everything that was on his mind. And there he let loose. And beyond that, we have one pasuk that we read with the Nigan, the trop of Eicha. Eicha es solivadi, torchachem umasachem v'rivchem. Seemingly, in Chazal connect Eicha, that the Eicha in Parshas Dvorim is connected with the Eicha Yoshua Vadot. It's apparently the root of the Eichel Yoshua Vadot, it's the beginning. And the Sforno writes that what was so difficult in this pasuk, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's, what was he disturbed by? And he writes, Shavu Bisha Bisa Rosam Shikonis La'aretz Bilti Shomul Chama. The Jews in the Midbar lived under enviable circumstances. The Rabbeinu Shalom promised them that they would enter Eretz Yisrael, they would conquer Eretz Yisrael, and without firing a shot. That which took place at Yericho, a walled city, which in the modern era is extremely difficult to capture. If you study the history of World War II, which I have studied extensively, and you have walled cities in Germany, how many weeks and weeks with tanks and artillery and airplanes they fought to conquer them? formidable obstacles. Yericho, a walled city. In the ancient world, how are we to conquer Yericho and other walled cities? And how? He marched around, we blew the shofar, and that's it, and we took over. And in that fashion, we were to take all of Eretz Yisrael. In that fashion, apparently miraculously, we read about Og Melech HaBoshen, Shisha Miracle Chevel Argoy, 60 cities with Dlosayim of Briach, walled cities, fortified cities. Lulvad Orei Aprozi Harvei Moed. Walled cities fell to untrained soldiers. Could we ask a greater gift of the Rabbeinu Shalom? The quest of the human being for Nachla, for a place in this world to put his 2 feet on the ground and say it's his. And to come without sorrow, without difficulty. We should have been flying high in the Midbar. And yet, what happens? This should have surpassed, as Sforno tells us, all our possessions and all the petty squabbling that went on. And nevertheless, lo nimnu milo erer divrei ribos achaveiro. There was such internecine fighting between one and the next. We had sorry asoros. Could we imagine? We have a society of 305 million people here in the United States, approximately, that we would need 30.5 million judges just to keep civil order between the citizens. Mind-boggling. I mean, the entire federal bureaucracy has what, 2-3 million people? We'd have to have 30 million judges just to keep order. Now imagine all the stenographers that we would need around that, and the police and everything else, the support apparatus. And that's what went on in the Midbar. It always troubled me. Sorry, I saw it. For every 10 people, a judge? Yeah, that's beyond. But ultimately, we had to break it all the way down, that for every 10, there had to be a judge. So the Sforno writes, this was because of ill feelings in people's hearts. Improper association with others. A person had so much to look at, so much to be sameach about. If I would tell you now, Rabbi say, on the way out of shul, every one of you is getting $1 million in cash on the way out. There's a guy standing by the door, and you're going to get a bag with $1 million in cash. The simcha that we would have, could we go home and complain that our neighbor threw a piece of his gum wrapper on our property? Who could think of it? I'm just rejoicing at $1 million. So he threw some of his garbage. He wasn't careful that it blew onto my property. So I wouldn't even notice. Shouldn't notice. But royally, an improper association with others. And this is what started, this led all the way to Eicha Yoshko Vodot. It undermined Jewish society. I'm reminded, if one is a student of Slobodka, and I personally am to some measure, there's an awesome book, it's called the Mashgiach. It's the biography of Ramea Chodesh, Zecher Tzadik Levorach, the Talmud of the Alter, the Mashgiach, for 40, 50 years of Chevron Yeshiva, or more. It's written by his daughter, Rebbe Tzenezrach. It's a lengthy book, 600 or so pages long. But a couple of summers back, I read through it. And in there's a very interesting and fascinating story. He has a son who I'm friends with, Rav Moshe Chodesh, the Rosh Yeshiva Baruch Hanan. And he writes that when he was learning in Chevron Yeshiva, so he and his buddies decided it would be a good idea, very popular today, that they should learn the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, to be Mechazek and Shmiras HaLoshon. But it's a yeshiva, it's not a hefker. So before you do something in the yeshiva, you go and you ask the Rosh Yeshiva, the Mashgiach, if this is what you're supposed to be doing. So he went to represent his chabura and yeshiva to ask his father if this is appropriate. And rather surprisingly, he got almost a negative reaction from a Meir Chodesh. He did not respond very favorably to the idea. And he was rather taken aback to the holy words of the Chofetz Chaim, such an important sefer, Shmiras HaLoshen. His father looked at him and said, Rabbi Isai, he said, the problem is, instead of fixing the problem, we're applying band-aids. We need the Chofetz Chaim to teach us that we shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. He says, but why do we want to speak Lashon Hara in the first place? That I need the Chofetz Chaim to tell me not to. Did we ever ask ourselves that question? If we had the requisite Avos Yisrael, then who would have to open up to say for Chofetz Chaim? I would naturally swing back in revulsion from Lashon Hara. That's my negative reaction. Of course it's important to know the halachos that the Chofetz Chaim wrote. But is that the refuah to Lashon Hara? Where's the Avos Yisrael that was supposed to have? The perspective of a giant of Musa that could see not the trees, but the forest. In the Gemara in Gittin, we have that famous story, infamous story perhaps, of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. And Bar Kamsa, much to his misfortune, gets invited to a party where he's not wanted. Why he attends the party? He was not a fool, Bar Kamsa. It's quite obvious he was not a fool. When he was angry, he had access to the highest echelons of the Roman Empire. This was not a place where fools were allowed in. This was a government that ran the world. Why did he go to this party? Because Chazal teaches, Chavos HaLevavos talks about it, Marshal talks about it, that if there's a lack of shalom between people, so do chesed for someone else. Do chesed for the person that I'm angry at. And therefore ameliorate the anger and bring forth feelings of Avos Yisrael. So he took it as the proverbial peace pipe. And that's why he shows up. He's thrown out rather unceremoniously. And Igmar tells us that he goes and he tells the Roman Empire that the Jews are in open rebellion against you. So they're a little skeptical. Their security apparatus hasn't picked it up yet. So he says, I'll prove it to you. Let the emperor send the korban to the Beis HaMikdash and you'll see if they offer that korban or they reject it. If they're loyal subjects of the emperor, and we know that karbonos are accepted from non-Jews to Gemara, then of course they'll bring that karbon. If they reject it, it's symptomatic that they're rebelling against you, and they want to stick it to you. So what does he do? So he goes, and he brings an animal, and the animal, either there's a mum in the lip, or dukim shabayim means that a cataract, in such fashion that in their religious worship they also would not use a bal mum. It was disrespectful to use an animal which was marred. They understood that, but he took something subtle enough that in the halacha it was a mum, and a non-Jew would never consider it a mum. A cataract is a good example. Not obvious. It's not an obvious flaw. Doesn't see so well. So what? The halacha says a cataract is a mum. But in a non-Jewish world, it's not a mum. And the Marshal tells us something very interesting. The Marshal says that these two mumen, Mina Shamayim, they were not by chance. Mina Shamayim, there was a simon, there was a message that the Rabbeinu Shalom sent with these two women. And that is, on one hand, what took place in the incident with Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Whoever the host of this party was, he remains rather unknown in history, veiled, perhaps for good reason. And he spoke inappropriately. He shamed Bar Kamtza, threw him out, Bifnei Am Ve'Edom, a public confrontation, threw him out. The Marsha says this shaming would fit under the general heading of Lashon Hara, of inappropriate speech. And therefore there was a mum in the lip. Our lips were not complete. They did not serve the Rabbeinu Shel Olam appropriately. And in the eye, why? The Marsha writes, the question remains, why did the host throw him out? What exactly was his issue? If we stop to calculate, we could understand that someone has hatred for another person, and therefore he's disturbed that the other person should benefit from it. We could understand such hatred. So Bar Kamtza, in fact, addressed that. He said, I'll pay for my own portion. So you can go to sleep at night, and you don't have to feel that you gave a nickel to your enemy, Bar Kamtza. That wasn't enough. Bar Kamtza was obviously a man of means. So he tells him, I'll pay for the half the party, I'll pay for the whole party. Not a bad deal. This must have been a pretty expensive party. Who was at this party? Obviously the Hoi Palut. What were the Rabbonim doing there? It means the upper echelon of society, the wealthy, the aristocratic, the politically well connected. The movers and shakers of society were at this party. This wasn't a party with a herring and a little bit of kichel. It cost a heavy sum. And he offers to pay for the whole party. He can certainly go to sleep tonight with $30,000 in his pocket, the cost of the party. And all on Bar Kamtza, to the contrary. He ate now, he benefited from Bar Kamtza. If anything, he can revel in delight. Not only didn't Bar Kamtza benefit from him, but his arch enemy paid for all his friends. And he asked for more than that. So why did he throw him out? What drove him? And the Marsha says, what drove him was Raya Ayin. He had a negative view towards helping other people. He didn't want someone else to benefit, someone that he didn't like, should in any way benefit from his party, even though he's no longer paying for the party. He called him. This guy, when all the it's all settled, he had a place at a party that I called. He couldn't live with it. It's Raya Ayin. A negative view about sharing with others, to such an extent. When it's really Bar Kamtza who now is sharing with him. But the party took place because of me. To share with Bar Kamtza, that's beyond me. I can't do such a thing. There was Rav Yonasan Eibsh, Rav Meir Primishlan, one of the giants of Chassidus. The world tells us that on Shavuos, he used to relate the following story. It happened apparently in the 17th century. And every Shavuos, he used to relate this story, apparently to inspire his flock to what Kabbalah Satorah should mean. There was a Yid who lived in Vienna. His name was Rav Shimshon Westheimer. That was his name. And he was an intimate associate of the King of Austria. The king respected him deeply as a very wise and profound thinker, a person that he could turn to for all types of advice, and he respected his piety, and the king spent an enormous amount of time discussing his affairs with him, and all types of things with him. One day, he was walking with Rav Shimshon Westheimer, and he asked him the following question. He said, "Why is it that the Jews suffer so much in Europe? Such a pious people. The Almighty should love them." Now, obviously, the intent behind that question was a Christian, a Christian theology that was behind the question. And Rav Shimshon Westheimer told him that the reason that we suffer so much is because of sinas chinam, because we don't have appropriate affinity, love for each other. And the king was very highly skeptical, and he felt that Rav Shimshon Westheimer was, in fact, trying to dodge the question, did not want to give him an honest answer. And he was became very angry. And he told him, you have 3 days to come back and give me the real answer to this question. And if not, I'm going to banish you and all the Jews from Vienna. He was rather perturbed, but he wasn't sure what to do. And he invoked Kabbalah, Ashelas Chalom, and Min HaShamayim, they answered him that he'd given the right answer. That's what Chazal is, the answer that Chazal gave. And he shouldn't worry about the king. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam will take care, will have the king realize himself that what Rav Shimshon Westheimer told him is true. In the next day or two, the king went off, as kings were wont to do, to go hunting in the forest. This was the royal sport. And of course, he went with a huge entourage of police and army men for his security. And somehow the king wandered off and became separated from his entourage. And nightfall comes and he finds himself lost in the forest with not a single soul around. And it's quite cold and uncomfortable in the forest. And he's trying to find his way out. As it gets dark, he sees through the trees and through the forest in the distance the lights of a town. So he realizes that all is not lost. There's a village not far away. So he walks towards the light that he sees, and finally he reaches a creek or a river, and it stands in between him and this village. And he's not going to stay outside the whole night. The elements are too harsh for that. He can't swim across in his royal clothing. So he undresses himself. He takes off all his royal clothing. He's absolutely nude. And he swims across. He makes it across the river. He gets up on the other side. It's now close to midnight. And he approaches the houses in this village. He bangs on the door. They look outside and see a madman, a naked Meshugana, standing in the outside 12 at night. Who knows what this guy wants? He'll kill me. Nobody opens the door for him. Finally, he figures, listen, the Jews are compassionate people. So he sees a house with a mezuzah. So he says, I have no choice. I'll knock on that door. The man opens the door and he sees a human being standing outside, stark naked. He's certainly not going to believe he's the king. But nevertheless, he's obviously in desperate shape. He brings him into his house. He gives him clothes. He gives him hot food to eat. He gives him a bed to sleep in. The next day, the king wakes up. He knows he's never going to convince this fellow that he's the king of Austria. That's not going to happen. So he tells him, listen, I'm going to Vienna, and I'm going to the king's palace, and I want you to come with me. Okay. Figures, listen, why not? See what happens. So he comes to Vienna, he comes to the palace, and as he comes to the palace gates, they just open up one after the other, and he marches right in, and he goes into the innermost sanctum of the palace. He's rather impressed. The king goes into one of his rooms, puts on his royal clothing, another crown, he comes out, and he says, listen, now you believe me that I'm the king of Austria. You saved my life. So I want to do anything that I possibly can for you. What reward can I give you? So he says, a reward? I don't need a reward. I'm a successful merchant. I have everything that I need. I'm glad that I was able to assist the king, and that's fine. I don't need anything more than that. So the king begs him. It's inappropriate that I shouldn't reward you. Listen, here's my vault. Walk inside and take out what you saved my life. Take whatever you want from there. Gold, silver, whatever. Just take whatever you want and take it home with you. It's yours. And he says, Your Majesty, I don't need a thing. I have everything that I need in life. And finally, the king says to him again, but please, I have to thank you in some way. Is there at least some favor that I can do for you? So he thinks for a moment and he says, Your Majesty, there's one favor you could do for me. I have a little problem in my business. I'm successful, but I do have a little problem in my business. What's my problem? There's a peddler that comes to my village from outside, and he sells the same stuff that I sell, and he's taking away some of my customers. So if the king would issue a royal edict banning this peddler from my town, it would be a tremendous favor for me. And the king is flabbergasted. And he calls back Rav Shimshon Westheimer, and he says, you're absolutely right. I offered him anything he wants from the king's treasury. He could have taken enough gold, silver, diamonds with him that his great-grandchildren would have lived in wealth. He didn't need his business anymore. He could have nailed the door closed and never looked at it again. That didn't sway him at all. What troubled him? This one guy that's encroaching a little bit on his territory. We're possessed with Kleinigkeit, with little things. The king offered him royal wealth for generations. That's not important. This guy's stepping on his toes a little bit. I have to take care of him. We lack Toiv Ayin. The willingness to transcend ourselves, to see beyond ourselves, to embrace someone else. Let me give you some examples of what Toiv Ayin is. Some that I know personally, some that I know from others. The founder of Telz Yeshiva, Rav Chaim Telz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, back at the beginning of the 20th century. So we heard, apparently after the yeshiva closed in Volozhin, that Rav Chaim Brisk was this phenomenal Magid Shir. So he offered him to come say a shir in Telz Yeshiva. And Rav Chaim Brisk turned him down. So Rav Chaim Telz was persistent. He sent back to him, said, listen, come to the yeshiva, and you'll say the higher shir, and I'll say the lower shir in the yeshiva. But I want you to come. I hear that you have your Torah is phenomenal, and it will have a dynamic effect on the Bochrim and the yeshiva, and I want you to come. And when Rav Chaim Brisk turned him down a second time, so he still didn't give in. So he sent a third communication to Rav Chaim Brisk. He says, I'll come to Telz and I'll give you the yeshiva and I'll walk away from it. The yeshiva is yours. But I want the Bochrim to have you for Rosh Hashanah. Rav Chaim Brisk turned him down a third time. He didn't come. Toiv Ayin. He saw the possibility of what was best for the Bochrim and Yeshiva. Zero ego. Nothing important. Just to assist, to help the next person. That's it. He had a yeshiva. He founded a yeshiva with all the difficulty that was involved. If he could get Rav Chaim Brisk to take over the yeshiva, he'd walk away. That the Bochrim should learn from such a Rosh. That's Toiv Ayin. Zachisi, Baruch Hashem, spent much time in my life with Rav Henoch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Shimon Chofetz Chaim. I cannot thank him enough, and I cannot thank the Rebbeinu Shel Olam enough for the time that I had with him. And we shared all types of experiences together. In Tov Shin Lamed Gimel, Rav Shimon Chofetz came to Eretz Yisrael. It was his habit, usually December time, something like that. He came to Eretz Yisrael. Came again, I don't remember which of the two times. He was there again that year. Pesach, he was there in Eretz Yisrael. For one of the times he came to Eretz Yisrael, so he disappeared for a day. The fellow that ran the office in Yeshiva saw that he needed to relax a little bit, so he took him in his van and he drove him off into the wild Leander of Eretz Yisrael to see a little bit what was going on. And apparently he stopped in a yeshiva someplace. And I met him the next day. And what does he tell me? He says, Herschel. He says, what's the acid test if someone is avasater? The fact that I like my yeshiva, that's not symptomatic that I have avasater. Every person likes his business. So, of course I like my yeshiva. What's the acid test? If one has avasatara, the acid test of avasatara is how much do I like the next person's yeshiva? If I am more like Gil and Simcha, if I'm enthusiastic and joyful that the next Rosh Yeshiva succeeds, that he has a beautiful yeshiva, that's avasatara. The standard that he held himself to be a toiv ayin. Not to begrudge others, to the contrary, to celebrate their successes. If I celebrate their successes in Torah, then I can first consider myself to have Avas HaTorah. A very high bar, he said for himself. But a very profound statement. Let me end with a story. It's a very remarkable story. I heard it sitting in this Beis HaKnesses, somewhere in the back over there, where Harold's sitting, where Gershon's sitting. That's where I heard this story. You know, we're all familiar with the Bedatz in Yerushalayim. But few of us really comprehend that what it is. It's the Bezdin Tzedek of the Eid HaRedes. Eid HaRedes is a Kehila. Avos Yisrael is a Kehila. Vishnitz is a Kehila. Skver is a Kehila. Satma is a Kehila. Right? Eid HaRedes is a kehila. It's a kehila of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And as all kehilas have, it has a president, it has offices, etc. It happens to be what's most famous in the world about this kehila is that it is a very prominent and authoritative bezdin. They've achieved great prominence in many things in Yerushalayim. And they're renowned. So we know them because of the bezdin. But it's Eid HaRedes is a kehila. There was a president of this kehila. His name was Rav Gershon Shtemel. It was a chassadik livrocha. I did not meet him personally. I once saw him in the street. I was walking. I think that he was talking to Diane Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchok, a chassadik livrocha, when I saw him in Meir Shar. Someone pointed him out to me. I saw him one time. He's probably gone about 5 years or so, 7 years. I don't remember exactly. In his later years, I got a little bit involved with helping him. At the request of Rav Moshe Halberstam, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, my yidid, who was a dayan in Eid HaRedes, and he asked me to assist him. His son's going to come to America. He ran one or two meisters, yeshivas. And of course, they needed funds, and I should assist them. So I was makabel him very well. His son was approximately my age, maybe a little bit older than I am. And he came once. It was just before Pesach, one of the times that he came. And I was sitting in the back of the shul finishing a few days before Yom Tov, the Shabbos HaGovud Rosha. And he came, and I received him here, and he shared with me a phenomenal story. He said that one day, his father by that time was not living, I believe, asked me, he said, I believe it was in Beit HaKerem, that he has to go to Olavaya in Yerushalayim. I believe in Beit HaKerem. He says, I was rather astounded, because I didn't know who this person was that my father had association with, that he was going to this Leviathan Beit HaKerem. And I asked my father, and he pushed me off. He didn't want to answer me. He just says, listen, we have to get a taxi, and we have to go to this Leviathan. So I went to this Leviathan, came back from this Leviathan, and I was still puzzled. Even after the Leviathan, I had no idea that all the years, I never saw any association between my father and this Yid that had died. So I pressed my father, who was this Yid? Why in the world did you go to his Leviathan? You're a busy person. What was so significant? It wasn't a Godel. What was he that you went to his Leviathan? You had no personal association that I know of with him. So he says, his father said and told him the following story. And Rav Gershon Stemmer came initially from Germany. Now you may wonder how it is that a Jew from Germany became the head of the Eidah Haredis. This is not exactly, you know, his sphere. So listen what happens. He said, his father said, I came from Germany, apparently, I would think, somewhere in the 1930s, something like that, circa 1930, approximately. I don't know for sure. And there was one appropriate cheder for my father was a frum Jew from Germany, one appropriate cheder for my father to put me into. So my father put me into this cheder. It may, some say, have been Eitz Chaim, in fact. He did not mention the name, but it may have been Eitz Chaim. I don't know. I'll call upon him. I was 11 years old at the time. And it was a foreign country, the language, I was not so comfortable there with the whole, with the culture, with the circumstances. And I did not adjust well to Eretz Yisrael. And I was not learning well in the cheder in which I was in. And the Rebbe became pretty frustrated with me. And one day he really blew a fit. And as happened in old time schools, fortunately such things don't happen nowadays, but as it happened in old time schools, the Rebbe put a dunce cap on me. And he wrote on the dunce cap, this boy doesn't want to learn, the Yingle of Vilnius learned it. That was bad enough, but he marched me around through every classroom in the entire cheder. He says, I came home and I was wiped. I was humiliated as I was never in my life. And naturally, I told my father that I'm not going back to this cheder again. After the bizyonis that I suffered in this cheder, there's no way I'm crossing the threshold of this cheder again. No, he says, my father had no choice. There was only one other show in town then, and that was the cheder of the Yerushalmi Kanoim. So, someone from Germany wound up in the midst of the Kanoim of Yerushalayim. So I was 11 years old, and my father enrolled me in the new cheder, and I realized that I'm in a tight spot, because there's no other show in town. This is the final stop. The regular cheder they threw me out of, and if I don't make it in the cheder of the Kanoim, there's no place my father's going to have to send me to cheder. I'm not going to be able to learn. So, because of that, he says, and because of all that I had been through in the first cheder, he says, I became very serious about learning. And I started to take learning very seriously. And because of that, Baruch Hashem, I grew to be a Talmud Chacham. The man that died today, whose Levaya I went to, is the Rebbe that was mevazen me, that humiliated me in the first cheder. He says, I owe him a note of Akoras HaTov. Because of him, I became a Talmud Chacham. And therefore, I felt obligated to attend his Levaya. Now, Rabbeisai, tell me, this is the head of the Eidah Haredis, of the Kanoim in Yerushalayim. Could I describe a person that's a greater Toiv Lev than that? The normal reaction to what he had been through would be to despise that person for the rest of his life. And yet, his Toiv Lev, that he saw some good that came from it, despite how it came about, despite how he had suffered, but there was good that came from it, an appreciation of that good, that's Toiv Lev. He had a phenomenal Toiv Lev. And in fact, after I heard that, it's a personality I wish I had known personally. To see a person of such midas, of such character, that could transcend all the humiliation that he had suffered, and to feel obligated to attend the Levaya of this Malamut, that's Toiv Lev, Rabbi Yisrael. What the Rabbeinu Shalom asks of us is Toiv Lev. Chofetz Chaim Zecher Tzadik Livracha writes, it's in Tana D'Elio, there's a similar medrash, I believe, in the Psikta, that in Tana D'Elio, in the 23rd parak, the medrash writes that in the schus of the Gemilas Chasodim that the Jews did for each other in Mitzrayim, the Rabbeinu Shalom redeemed us. And the Chofetz Chaim Zecher Tzadik Livracha writes that La'osit, Mashiach Tzidkenu will also come in the schus of Chesed. We are a door which Baruch Hashem was phenomenally steeped in Chesed. As the Gemara says in Yuma, we're Isaac and Torah and Gemilas Chasodim. We can hold our heads high. We have nothing to be ashamed of. Our Torah and our Gemilas Chasodim stands out. We're an accomplished generation. But we need to strengthen ourselves in Toiv Leiv, to embrace the people that irritate us, to embrace the people that are not consistent with our philosophy, to embrace the people that perhaps we have good reason to be annoyed at, and to embrace them too. That's the Toiv Leiv. And apparently that's what the Mashal is telling us. The Sinas Chinam is not just the person that hates someone without reason, but the inability to muster Tov Leiv of the host to allow Bar Kamtza to stay, even after he's paying for the whole party, speaks of that Royal Leiv that the Sforno told us, that Eicho Esol Levadi Torchachem U'Masachem V'Rivchem. But the Rabbeinu Shel Olam grants that we draw inspiration from Tisha B'Av, from Meir Pramishlana, taught his chassidim, that what did the Rabbeinu Shel Olam want of us when he gave us the Torah, the Toiv Leiv, to embrace others fully without limitation. And that zchus may the Rabbeinu Shel Olam grant that we will see Mashiach tzedkeinu b'mehirah.